Hello and welcome to NYPD Blue Balls. This is a commentary episode, which means we are discussing Season 7, Episode 2, A Hole in One, while watching Season 7, Episode 2, A Hole in One. So if you have the ability to watch the episode with us, it's probably the best way to enjoy the episode. NYPD Blue is currently on Hulu if you have a premium subscription, and it is currently on Amazon for purchase, and you can buy the DVDs, but from what I understand, it's a little difficult to buy them. I'm sorry, but that is the truth. I want to thank you again for listening. I hope that our break didn't completely sway you from listening. It would just be our terrible sound quality and our personalities. With that said, I've also included when we start the episode so you could start with us. I don't know if that's helping with the commentary aspect of it or not, but I figured we'd try our best. So thanks again. I'll talk to you when the episode's over, and get ready for Season 7, Episode 2, A Hole in One. One, two, three.
All right, there we go.
All right, Season 7, Episode 2, A Hole in One.
Twin Towers, baby.
Wow. And we open up, and it's Kyle's first communion, not Kyle on the podcast, Kyle in the show.
I've never been to a communion, so.
You've been to a communion at our churches, you just didn't participate. It's not the same deal, because we don't believe in transubstantiation. Anyway.
Well, you don't believe in voodoo? Is that just a big word for voodoo?
Yes, God.
That's just a scientific word for voodoo and magic?
Okay, real quick, do you know who plays Kyle in this scene?
No.
That's played by Cortland Mead, who was, in the Little Rascals movie from the 90s.
That piece of shit.
He was also in the television show Recess, the animated show on Disney, and he was...
Have you watched Little Rascals recently?
Oh, the 90s one?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I end up watching it every year because there's something wrong with my brain.
What? What the fuck, Kirk?
I don't know why I end up watching it.
That is not the goddamn answer I was expecting, but okay. Hey, have you seen the Little Rascals movie recently? Oh, there's something wrong with my brain. I watch it once a year. What the fuck, dude?
It's the same thing with Meet the Deedles. I end up watching Meet the Deedles every fucking year, and I don't know why.
What the fuck is Meet the Deedles?
We don't have time. We don't have time for Meet the Deedles.
Is Meet the Deedles?
It's one of Paul Walker's first films. Him and Steve Van Warmer are brothers that get sent to Yellowstone to become men at this summer camp, but instead they end up saving Old Faithful from a plan to be stolen by Dennis Hopper and a bunch of groundhogs. It's very confusing.
Go fuck yourself, dude. You can go fuck yourself. Fuck all of that. Fuck me for even asking.
I'm not even joking. Well, this real
and
quick.
You wake up one day every year and go, fuck it, dude. Today is the day. I gotta get me the Deedles.
I watched Meet the Deedles on my birthday with my friends at the apartment, or at the where I live now, because I was like, let's do a movie night, and then we turned on Brink and Meet the Deedles, and everybody hated me after. We just skipped over one of my favorite scenes in
Meet the Deedles.
In mid-season NYPD Blue, where they find a surveillance van. And then when the surveillance van's like, fine, we'll leave, they made us. He's like, later, Squirt. He's like, Squirt, you have a pre-existing relationship with my kid? And then he kicks the van. I thought that was great. So anyway, Meet the Deedles. This is NYPD Blue Balls, where I, Kirk, and the other voice, Kyle, talk about NYPD Blue or Meet the Deedles.
Have you sought professional help?
Yes.
For the fact that you twice a year put time aside because you have to watch Meet the Deedles, or what was the other one?
Little Rascals, the 90s Little Rascals.
Little Rascals, the fucking Little Rascals movie?
I don't have an explanation for it, Kyle, but I will say this.
Yeah, keep saying more dumb shit. This is great.
I'm not even joking. I was like, if we ever got big enough doing this to be on How Did This Get Made as guests, I would suggest Meet the Deedles. Because it's a fucking hilarious movie. Also, I mean, no joke. You got Disney Plus, and we watched Disney Plus and put our movies on there and whatnot. I have watched Meet the Deedles 3 times. I haven't watched any other movie that many times on Disney Plus. I haven't watched any of the Loki stuff. I haven't watched any of the Star Wars stuff. But I've watched Meet the Deedles 3 times. I watched Heavyweights once.
This is gonna be like the plate situation again. It's gonna be the only thing that's on my mind. I'm like, I don't care about these two dumb fucks pretending to fall in love. Like, Mary DeFranco's a shitty cop, and they're gonna make her a detective or put her in vice or something. Like, who cares? My question is this. Okay, so you've given me two. Like, can you give me 3 more movies that you just have to watch every year? Don't be eccentric to be eccentric. Just give me the first 3 that come to your mind.
First 3 are probably Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Okay.
The Big Lebowski. There's a moment where times where it's just like I have to watch it again.
Two great flicks. Two great important American flicks.
Or
is Willy Wonka British? What would you call it?
Willy Wonka is German. It was made in Germany.
A German musical. Okay.
And I kind of just want to say a Batman movie, because it kind of, like, there's just a time where it's like, I want to watch a Batman movie, and then I choose which one.
I feel like that's a kind of a cop-out, but I'll give it to you.
Because sometimes
so after
it's
all of that, you take those 3, and then you're like, yeah, let me stuff in Meet the Deedles.
We're never going to get to this episode now. Basically...
What was the fifth one? Because I can't... That one just keeps pulling out of my brain.
The 90s Little Rascals movie.
Yes. Yes.
With cameos from former President Donald Trump and Reba McEntire.
The I got a dollar. Hey.
Kyle, if you want to start doing a quote off of the 90s Little Rascals, I mean, I'm here for it. Darla, you make me sick. You are like scum between my toes. Anyway, we gotta stop talking about Little Rascals because the star of that Bug Hall who played Alfalfa is a staunch anti-abortion asshole, so fuck that guy.
Who is?
Bug Hall. He was the guy who played Alfalfa in The Little Rascals.
Oh.
He was in a couple other things in Disney and then went to obscurity because he's not that good of an actor. So he didn't get any more work, and he also hates abortion.
Well, you think killing babies is okay? Okay, good to know.
Anyway.
Good to know this is the person I've teamed up with.
Anyway, Kyle. I wanted to talk about how fucking Sipowicz basically gaslights Russell into talking to Kirkendall about her husband.
Oh, dude, I get so frustrated with Sipowicz at this point.
Yeah.
Because I would be like, if anyone tried to do this to you, you would, like, take them into the interview room and berate them and be like, don't treat me like this. And you just, like, again, she's a woman. She doesn't have the right to, like, do whatever she wants.
Because, yeah, we find out when we weren't talking about the Little Rascals and Meet the Deedles.
Meet the Deedles.
I could talk about Meet the Deedles all day. It's a hilarious, stupid movie. If you ever want to laugh, look up the Siskel and Ebert review of
Meet the Deedles. Fuck you. I know you've looked it up. I know you probably looked up a ton of other shit. You probably got Meet the Deedles trivia coming out your ass. Save it. Save it for Unspooled, my man. Okay.
It's not in that list. There is no way.
Save it for a show that gives a fuck. I'm not here to talk about Meet the Deedles anymore.
Hey, Kyle. You know what its soundtrack is made up of? Almost completely ska. It's almost
I was gonna say, I bet you like the leading song for the whole show is Two Princes by the Spin Doctors.
Oh no. That's too mainstream. It's all Voodoo Glow Skulls and Real Big Fish and fucking
Yeah. Fuck you, dude.
Anyway, they get Russell to tell Kirk and Dahl that her husband is up for trafficking drugs. And she takes it pretty poorly.
Well, I mean, everything was going well, dude. I mean, like, they're at communion. Like, that's the first thing she says when she comes in after Andy gaslights Russell. She comes in and is like, wasn't it a wonderful day? Like, it was the best day, blah, blah, blah. Like, and she's, like, walking on air because everything's working out. Like, Don's actually being a fucking dad, and her kids are happy. She seems happy, and then she walks into this shit.
Yeah.
She doesn't cry well, though.
Also, it's
There's no tears, Kirk. Her eyes are not wet. Her eyes are drier than the Mojave Desert right now.
You're not gonna get a supporting Emmy without tears.
No. No, you are not.
But what happens here is, I think, the problematic thing, which is, I think it portrays women in the workplace as, like, passive-aggressive, petty people, even though the dudes have been doing it this whole time to each other. But how Kirkendall was like, she's like, I'm sorry, and she's like, are you?
Are you? And then she says something about, I just put my emotions on my sleeve.
And she's like, I'm sorry that we're all not saints, Russell.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, what the fuck?
She's just hurt, dude. She's hurt. She got fucking, like, she just found out that, like, her husband, again, like, I just explained it. But, or are we seeing who the real Russell is?
Or you mean Kirkendall?
Oh, Kirkendall, sorry. Yeah, man, I'm missing up names today.
Because Russell is just like, what the fuck? What did I do?
Yeah.
I didn't do anything.
Russell's like, I thought I was doing the right thing by letting you know that your husband or your ex-husband is being fucking followed. And then Andy, of course, the king of tactfulness, as she walks out, is like, how'd it go? He can't give it a fucking minute.
And now this P.O. comes in with one of his...
I love this dude. I love this dude.
The CO or the... Or not the CO. The PO or the former convict?
The parolee himself.
Yeah, dude.
I love how he acts. I love whoever wrote his character. I love the whole fucking thing.
Well, you're talking about Billy Gallo, who plays Romeo.
Sure.
He is a famous face because he's been on an earlier episode of NYPD Blue.
And what?
He was, I'm trying to find it right now. He was in the episode Tushful of Dollars in season 3.
Okay.
I'm trying to remember his fucking, I'm trying to find his name.
Okay, I remember that episode.
Why can't I fucking find it? But yeah, so he's been on the show. And he does a good job of playing like a guy, he's like, I have rageaholism, and then they demean what he's saying by being like, oh yeah, all of us are just happy little boys. You went to some head shrinker who told you you got a anger problem. And it was like, okay, I mean, well,
maybe, like, he's trying to better let's himself. Let's kick a guy when he's trying to be better in life. Let's kick a guy when he goes, hey, I recognize now that what I used to do wasn't the right way and I'm trying to fix it. Oh yeah, you little bitch.
he was Jimmy DelMarco on Tushful of Dollars. He also he was also on several episodes of Who's the Boss?
Which we learned was Angela.
Yes, of course. In the episode of Community.
Yeah.
One of my favorite things ever is when Professor Woolley, who's Kevin Corrigan, he does the Nicolas Cage class. He's like, Abed Nadir. He drove our other film studies professor insane by answering the question, who is the boss? I have respect for Abed Nadir. I do not respect Professor Sheffield.
like just such a weird, like,
yeah, they tie everything together on that show.
Yeah, it's good stuff. Now I have a question. So this Billy Gallo guy, does he kind of look like Goro from the Mortal Kombat movie?
Oh, a little bit when he's because of that scowl.
Yeah, he looks so much like Goro, and it was like, did he play Goro? And he didn't. That was played by an animatronic. So yeah, this dude
he's just trying to do the right thing because people are trying to like get him back into the gang life.
Yeah,
and his PO's telling him like, no, you got to turn this in. You don't want to get in trouble.
So. We just see Fancy again, first time in this episode. He was only in one scene in the first episode of this season. And you know what else? We've only seen Martinez once and he had no lines.
Yeah.
What's going on? Also, Fancy realizes something's up by handing Russell a job to do, and then she gets a little...
No, John tries. John, you missed it. I think you missed it. But John tries to let him know before he says anything.
Oh, yeah.
Because
he
holds on to the pink slip for a little longer, and Fancy kind of looks at him like, what's going on? And then he lets go and then says it, and then all of this breaks down because she's emotional about a friend.
And then this scene where the two children are in the. Interrogation room so they don't have to be near Russell because they pissed her off.
Well, I don't think Danny pissed her off. I think it was more Sipowicz. I don't know why Danny has to hide. Sipowicz is the one that like kind of like mentored, bullied her into fucking doing something she didn't want to do.
Yeah. And then we got a classic baby in the dumpster.
That's not a real baby. That's 100% a fucking doll.
Well, yeah, they didn't put a real baby in the dumpster.
Like, try.
Well, as we know, babies kind of famous for being hard to direct. So they couldn't get one to just lay in the dumpster. And you
no,
know
I
babies.
Mean, like, just be better. Like, with the fakeness or whatever. Like, you have one job.
Just be better.
Again, this is a 1990 whatever, or two, early 2000s or whatever. So,
yeah, this is 2000. First time we mentioned
this. 2000, yeah, because the next year is the beginning. I think has the talk about 9/11.
So I also wanted to mention in that scene they talk to a guy who's like, "Oh, that's Rosanna's baby," and then they ask for a physical description, and he includes the fact that she has a great ass, because that's very important to these female police officers. To go look for her while she does her stroll. It's like, well, he did say she had a great ass, so let's make sure.
Well, if you saw two prostitutes standing next to each other, and one of them didn't have a great ass, and one of them did, you'd probably go talk to the great ass first and be like, hey, you Rosanna? You get me?
So, they get a... DOA from Fancy, that'd be Sipowicz and Sorensen for...
I feel like you'd be a really bad detective.
Who?
You.
Why?
Just based off of these conversations we have.
Why? First off, fuck you. Second, is this because of Meet the Deedles? Is this because of Meet the Deedles? Suddenly I'm a bad detective?
Well, that's part of it. Like,
fuck
your personal
you.
Choices alone... affect how I think you make decisions, but that's okay.
Well, this is...
Anyways, they get called to a murder and they find Juan Almedo.
And Juan Almedo is the one with the hole in them, hence the title Hole in Juan.
But he's also the one that the guy when he came in to, like, with his PO, was talking about a Juan Almedo.
Mm-hmm. So they're like, oh, it must have been Romeo, because he said he was having beef with him.
Even though Romeo was saying, I don't want to be a part of it.
Now, this bitch that they're talking to now, we don't find out her name. She's apparently been sitting around the entire time around the crime scene and then gives them absolutely no information.
Yeah. I feel like she's been in another episode as someone else.
I have her up here because she...
Am I wrong?
She has been in some shit that you may have seen. But I don't know about another episode.
I feel like the other episode she played, she was more of a crackhead, like, coming up out of a place. I love this girl, too. Maria Alvarez. Romeo's girlfriend.
Okay, let's explore that. Why do you love this girl? Because I hate this girl.
Just as a character.
Okay. You are...
I work with, like, 7 of these women. And I think she just does a good job playing that character.
And she's saying that her boyfriend Romeo is about to kill himself, and she wants them to go fast so that he doesn't blow up her apartment. She won't get in the car until Sipowicz opens the door for her. I just wanted to mention the woman that we were talking about, Sylvia Kelligan. She is in another episode of NYPD Blue, but it's a later episode.
Okay. Sorry.
No, it's all good. But I'll mention the other movie she's in, because that kind of blew my mind, her known force. So we have these two hookers fighting.
Well, yep.
They.
I don't know why I said well. They're both hookers.
So I was like, huh, this shorter one kind of looks familiar. And the shorter one who's playing Rosanna is played by Tawny Cypress. And she is one of the main characters, Thaisa, in Yellow Jackets on Showtime, which is fucking awesome. It's a great show.
And the tall one is the Emmy on the Wire.
That's right, because that's Eric Dellums. He's also on Homicide: Life on the Street. And he's done a ton of voice work for movies. Anyway. Now we're back with Romeo, who's literally has his head in the oven, and they pull his ass out and air out the apartment.
I didn't know that was a way to commit suicide.
I didn't either. I've always heard people say put your head in the oven, and I didn't really understand what that meant. But then once I saw this, I was like, oh, it makes sense.
But like I thought, like was it on?
But it is on.
But how is he laying on that there and they're not burning him?
Well, no, the fire isn't on. You just turn the gas on.
Yeah. I didn't know that. But that's how you could kill yourself like that.
Oh.
So my whole thing is like, why not just turn it on and get in the oven?
Why not just burn? Well, I was.
Oh, you know why? You want to know why? Because if you actually tried to burn yourself and die, you wouldn't do it. But if you breathe in gas, it's easier because it's just like you're going to sleep. But if you actually had to like feel the physical pain that it like really takes to die, people wouldn't do it.
Also, I felt like it wasn't cool to have John seemingly recognize. I think the name's Ibanez. Inez. The transgender
the prostitute or the tall one. The tall one or
the tall prostitute.
The transgender woman?
Yeah, because like, they make it seem that John's like, oh, I know who this is. What the hell?
They also, like, I mean, I don't know. Can we talk about this as two cis men? But,
we'll find out.
They also make it very apparent that John is weirded out by transgender people. Like, in my opinion, Andy handles dealing with or seeing the transgender like prostitute around better than John does.
Huh. Well, I thought that scene was him recognizing Inez. Like I thought that was him like, oh, I've seen Inez around my social circle, and I was like, that didn't have to happen. Like, he can be gay. And,
oh. Maybe I misread it wrong or differently.
I think he was just, I don't think he was weirded out so much as what is Inez doing here? Or whatever Inez's name given before her transition, because they give
it.
But this is fucked
up. They tell Rosanna that her kid's dead.
Yeah. And she's like, I gave Inez $40 to watch her for a couple hours and was gone for 4 days.
Yeah, that's an old joke.
That's, it's not very cool. Well, sometimes you just lose track of hours, and next thing you know, it's 4 days later.
Sometimes you lose track of 96 hours.
Speaking of crack, if you haven't begun listening to the It's Always Sunny podcast, I recommend it. It's very fun.
I have. I'm like way behind, but I've been going through them when I can. I think it's also really interesting that as Kirkendall and Russell are going through all of this, they have to do this
specific crime.
This specific job, yeah, where they're both like, and of course it's like, oh, they're women, so like they're emotionally feeling it more than anyone else, which is kind of a little bit of bullshit, but because I feel like if Andy was on this same, I feel like if the roles were switched and Andy had to take care of that one, he would be more of an emotional wreck than those two are acting like. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
He'd be like, that prostitute would have been slapped.
I really like this scene. Well, besides the fact that Sipowicz just said which name was which. I really like this scene because Romeo is like, look, man, if you look at the facts, you're going to just pin this on me. Like, let's get it over with. And they're all like, well, if you didn't do it, he's like, I didn't do it, but I have no account for my time. So there's nothing I can do. Like, it's gonna be me. And then hilariously, when they were like,
that's just a dude who's been beaten by the system, man.
Well, he did do wrong. He admitted to doing drug shit earlier.
No, yeah, but like, the other thing is that dude has also, this whole episode, talked about wanting to like change and be different and blah blah blah, and he just knows that he's not going to get a fair shake.
And then his parole officer's like, "Did you do it?" And he's like, "No, man." I think it's just a pretty solid scene of, I guess you're right.
I'm with. I told you this dude is good. Like, I like this dude. The acting this dude does in the scene.
And then he also says, what was kind of funny was, he's like, what did you do when you got home? And he's like, I listened to affirmation tapes. And Sipowicz was like, ugh, jeez, what a weirdo. And it's like, hey, Sipowicz, you could do with some therapy yourself, brother. Like,
No, not Sipowicz.
you could do with some mental health work. So this is where they misname Inez. And then she corrects them, which I thought was pretty rad. And then I was like, this might be a somewhat progressive take on transgenderism for 2000. I was proven incorrect by the end of the scene. Or the end of the episode. But it's still pretty decent for 2000, I think. And Kyle left the chat.
No, I'm just listening to it because you're saying it's progressive, so I want to make sure I don't miss anything. Well, I know that's not good. That's not good for the podcast, but
well, just the idea that they came in, they said her name when she was a man, and then she corrected them. It was like, I prefer to be called Inez. She mentions that she's had the surgery, and so she had to go to the doctor. Because it's like important that they check this shit out. And she had
equipment installed.
And she's like, I left the baby for a little bit of time, but she left me with the baby for 4 fucking days.
Yeah.
Like it's.
It's weird. I feel weird about this. I feel weird that they're trying to pin, like, her killing or. Yeah, her killing the baby.
Well, I think they're doing that. I think they're doing that process where they go hard on them to hopefully crack them. But she's like saying to them, like, I didn't do this.
Yeah.
And that's what kind of leaves them at a standstill. Like, what do we do?
And she's like emotionally torn up about the death of this child.
And it presents this person as a person that feels things and is like dealing with this. So you're like, wow, that's pretty good. They made her a three-dimensional character. Then here's a great scene where the boss is like, hey, are you acting like children?
So you said that it was a pretty progressive scene, but then the end, it isn't. What?
Oh, the end of her character.
Oh, the end of the episode?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
The end of her character run, they kind of do something that I was like, well, you know, we could have done a little bit better.
We're sorry.
Well, I was applauding quite a bit that the episode has this character and they're presented three-dimensionally, even though it is literally as a prostitute.
Yeah.
Which is kind of not great.
Yeah.
But then they mention, like, oh, the naming thing is important. Calling them what they'd like to be called is important. Her decision to get the surgery was her decision, and then, you know, a part of who this person is to fix what they have. But the way they end it with her was kind of like, ah, you didn't really stick the landing. And then here's one of those no dialogue scenes where they see vomit in the baby's crib. Pretty nice looking room for a crackhead, though.
Yeah, right? Like,
it's got art.
Oddly nice.
It's got art on the wall.
Like, oddly nice. Yeah, but Wire taught me anything. Like, there wasn't much going on those walls.
So here's this bitch. It's only a great scene because John tricks her into being a decent person. Well, no, he doesn't trick her into being a decent person to give up information that they need to solve their case. Because she only wants a
information
reward.
That she like should have given up already.
Oh yeah, because she knew all this information on the street. She was waiting for it to wait a while and see if there'd be a reward.
Yeah.
Which
I'm learning is like a lot of people do.
And like, John. What I think this is one of the things that makes me like John, because John just kind of like fucking talks her into giving it up because she clearly doesn't know how it works. And he's like, you just gave the information to me. Like, we don't have to give you shit now.
He's learned.
He what?
He's watched the boys. He's watched Simone. He's watched Russell. He's learned.
He's learned how to get it.
Yep.
Well, this this woman plays this character, Sylvia Keeligan, or Keeligan. Her known fors are the original Spider-Man with Tobey Maguire, Crash, Coach Carter, and Bringing Out the Dead as a crackhead, starring Nicolas Cage.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, she's been in some shit.
I think what John also does is he does a good job of getting the important information that he needs through questions like in between other questions that she wants answered. Does that make sense?
Yeah. He's getting what he needs.
He's keeping the conversation going to make her feel calm and like, oh yeah, he's actually listening. But then like in between that, he's like saying like, well, what's your name? Like, well, what did you see? And he's like just trying to get more and more information. I thought it was really well done, I guess.
I agree with that completely, but this is the scene where it's like, oh, so she's kind of a horrible person, this transgendered human being, because they then ask her questions and like just say yes or no. Did you go out and leave the kid in the crib? Did you come back and find that the kid was dead? And she says yes. And then they ask, did you put her in the dumpster? And she says yes. And then they repeat the question and she's like, are we done here? Because I already answered it. And it's like, what the fuck? You were, like, crying earlier. Like, now you're suddenly a fucking robot?
She switched it off, dude. She switched it on, switched it off.
And it's like, wow, that's fucked up.
She was playing games. She's just trying to get out of there. She don't want to go to jail. And, I mean, like, no offense, like, it ain't her baby.
No offense, it ain't her baby. The Kyle Asher story.
It's not her fault that the baby died. It's her mother. The original fault is with the mother.
Yeah, but she's pretty fucking cold about it now.
100%. But the mother can't be walking around crying, giving a fuck now. Where were you 4 days ago?
Yeah, they...
Are we serious about this?
you seriously
don't think the mother has any fault in this?
No, she has tons of fault in it. And they're about to lay
If this was a fault pie, she would have like 50 to 60% of the fault.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not saying that.
Okay, thank you.
I was talking more about how it seemed like they presented this character who was like transgender and then put in a situation where it was like, well, I mean, what would any of us do? Like, I have to leave to get take care of this. When I come back, she finds out that the kid is dead. It turned from that to, like, she's an unfeeling robot. It's like, yeah, I put the kid in the dumpster. Who gives a shit? That's kind of fucked up. But when you talk about blame, like, the mother is 100% also to blame. And she tries to get some pity points by being like, she put my baby in a dumpster. And I think they respond with, like, you waited 4 days.
Yeah, she says, like, don't think I don't love my baby. I don't know how to live. Like, fair enough. We're still charging you with murder. Like, we're still charging you with neglect. Like, sorry. Like, learn how to live in jail then. Like, you killed an infant for no fucking reason.
And then we have this woman again, who's, like, giving her two cents.
She's the best, dude. She's the best.
Giving her two cents on the detective work. Saying Ricky got arrested elsewhere. And then Romeo comes back out, and she's super excited to see him. But the fact that she's giving him shit, like, oh, you almost destroyed the apartment, is like, he was trying to kill himself? He was trying to kill himself.
Again, I work with tons of women that are like this woman, and they're amazing.
I felt it kind of odd that, the guy was like, he wanted to share his gratitude, and they were like, Yeah, whatever. Just do right. And it was like, you could show some, like, acceptance of his gratitude. Like, that'd probably mean a lot to him, because he was about to kill himself.
Yeah, right. And Sipwitz just basically tells his sword, saying, hey, get the fuck out of here.
So I could ask the woman that I tortured how her and her friend are doing.
I love how the first question he asked for is, so it didn't go well? Kirk, we're supposed to believe that this man is the greatest detective in the New York City Police Department.
He's the greatest detective without a cowl.
Without a cowl, and he fucking says,
stupid. Well, Kyle, he might be the...
She doesn't say a word to him, which I think is really good. Because her beef's not with him, and she doesn't want to talk to him about it.
He might be the... This scene is also weird. This... Where... Where they just start saying, like, phrases.
I think Danny's being facetious and fucking with him.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but it's...
Because Sipowicz keeps trying to, like, impart wisdom, and then Danny's like, yeah, save money for a rainy day. Yeah.
This is very personal, but this just makes me think of when I worked with them.
Yeah.
And the shit that he would get, like, upset about, and I would just be like, dude, what, like, what?
Now, this is the forgiveness and apology hour. In the bathroom. And honestly, now after watching the episode that we watched earlier, this isn't the same. This is just the locker room. This isn't the same bathroom that they met with Martens, or is it?
I don't think so. No.
Because nobody goes like, hey, why is there a filing cabinet next to that fucking urinal? So close.
Yeah. Oh, no. I just would like to see in that corner. But to go back to that last episode, it would make sense that they didn't. It would make sense that they didn't have Martens come into the station, because if Martens would have come into the station and gone up to the squad, Baker and all those guys, it would have gotten back to them that Martens was there. Yeah. So maybe they were at someone else. Maybe they were at IAB's bathroom or some shit.
And IAB keeps their files in the shitter.
I don't know. I mean, I can't answer for IAB, you know?
But yeah, they forgive each other and they hug. And now we're at a scene that confused me quite a bit. And I know how it's going to make me sound, but Don shows up at Kirkendall's place, and Kirkendall is wearing this, which I was like, so you're going to fuck Don? And then...
Well, if she's going to bed, no. But I would say, like, you should have a robe on.
Yeah. Because those nips are blasted.
I love the line that he says, don't tell me this isn't a great country. Like, Don, like, he definitely voted for Trump.
Well, I mean, I was just going to say, because she's blasting in that apartment, she's blasting the nips like Jennifer Aniston did in Friends.
Her nips could cut glass right now.
And it's like, what the fuck, dude? And the second they start talking, she's like, I'm going to hit you in the fucking face. And he's like, What? Like, what are you doing? What happened?
But then Kirk, like, she can wear whatever she wants, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's fine. And he uses that against her once he realizes, like, I don't have a way in here. Yeah. He plays dumb. And he plays ignorant, like, how am I supposed to know what's in those boxes? And then she's like, shutting them down. He's like, you're getting the fuck out of here. And then he's like, oh, and you wore this?
Yeah.
He's like, I hope you don't end up alone forever for the kids, not your sake. And it's like, okay, well, his boner turned into an angry one pretty quick.
Doesn't he say, like, something like, makes you a bitter old broad or something like that?
Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah, he said something pretty fucked up. Yeah, he is a shitbag. And, like, I don't know who this actor is, but he does a pretty good job of, like...
He is a shitbag.
I guess being a shitbag, but he's a shitbag. I don't really like him.
His name is Eric Anderson.
His acting now is fine. If you need to cut this out, you can. His acting later is fucking garbage. But his acting now, when he's this Don, it's fine.
Well, he earned
those. But when he goes Eminem Don, his acting sucks.
Well, he got those acting chops on the set of Friday the 13th, the final chapter.
Okay.
And all of his other known fours were made after this show came out.
Okay.
But yeah, he just like. He shows up and he's like, okay, ready to go to Pound Town. And then she's like, I fucking hate you. And he's like, how am I supposed to know it's drugs? And then she's like, come on, Don, use your brain. And then when he realizes he's not getting any tonight, he's like, okay, well, you're a bitch. And you dress like a whore and you're going to die alone. And peace. Deuces. And I was like, what?
And then there's this weird scene where she's hugging herself.
And she looks like she might have scoliosis. Maybe she might got a little, she's a little question markish. Anyway, I'll look over my notes. Is there anything else about this episode you want to discuss?
No, because the things I want to discuss ruin
the future episode
later things. So I'll keep them to myself.
All right, well, I'm looking through my notes and looking through the other actors if I missed something. Eric Dellums, who we mentioned, does a ton of voice work, but he was in The Wire, as you said, as Dr. Randolph Frazier.
Yeah, he's not in it a lot. He's, like, very sparingly in it. I've been rewatching them with Maria. I think he's only in maybe a handful of episodes, like less than 15.
Well, it shows here six. There are six total episodes that he's in.
Yeah, he's not in it a lot.
He was also in Do the Right Thing.
Cool. I saw Do the Right Thing. I don't remember him.
He doesn't have a credited name, so I don't think he was a big character in it, but he wasn't.
Could have just been in the background or something.
He was also in the Eddie Murphy Dr. Dolittle.
Wasn't everybody?
You're thinking of the Robert Downey Jr. Dr. Dolittle.
Oh, fuck. I completely forgot he made one.
Anyway, that's the end of the episode. I don't know what to say. Thanks again for listening to NYPD Blue Balls, and apologies for talking about Meet the Deedles so much, but hey, it happens. If you need more NYPD Blue in your life, there's a couple of books out there. What Would Sipwits Do? A collection of articles about the show. True Blue, a book written about the first couple seasons by creators and consultants. And Gene Kendall's An Unofficial Guide to NYPD Blue on Amazon, which is, I believe, at 99 cents. If you want to hear more of my voice and possibly see my face, you can head over to twitch.tv/KirkHasGlasses, where I play video games and watch public domain movies, and it's all for free, unless you want to subscribe, but you don't have to do that, unless you really, really hate advertisements. Also, NYPD Blue Balls is still going to be coming out every other Tuesday to the best of our gosh darn ability. I have a couple episodes banked, so it at least will be on schedule for a time being. And keep on the lookout. There might be new episodes of Asher Brothers Podcast, which is mostly just the stuff cut out of NYPD Blue Balls, like what would have been this Meet the Deedles talk if it just didn't take over the entire thing. Anyway, have a good one. Peace.